husband's hers. I'll return for you as soon as I can. No, I'll come to you. Khalid smiled before pressing another heart-stopping kiss to her throat. Then he tucked the dagger into his tikka sash and disappeared beneath the tent flap. An unexpected chill fell over the tent, and Sherzad realized how very dark it still was. It was the cold that woke Jahandar. He could not recall the last time he'd felt so cold. His mind was battered and waterlogged, as though he'd been tossed about at sea. His throat felt as though it had been stuffed with silk thread. Dry-mouthed and disoriented, Jahandar reached for the book atop his chest, seeking its reassuring warmth. But it was not there. In a sudden panic, his eyes flew open. He sat up in his bedroll, his useless blankets peeling away like an onion skin. His tent was still shaded in the cloak of night. Dawn had barely broken through the tent seams, trickling down in fractured beams of light. Jahandar passed his palms across the bedroll, then across the floor beside him, then farther into the darkness. Still, he could not find the book. His panic mounting, he reached for the key around his neck. It, too, was gone. Realization came crashing down on him in a flash of light. Someone had stolen the book and key from him. His sluggish head and his swollen tongue were proof positive that someone had drugged him with a mind to pilfer his most prized possessions. Someone had fooled him and fleeced him. In a fit of rage, Jahandar bolted to his feet, kicking aside the brass lamp positioned next to his bedroll. The oil dripped from its innards in a slow dribble, filling the air with its pungent aroma, reminding him of the power lying dormant in the most innocuous of things. Indeed, with a mere snap of his fingers, Jahandar possessed the power to set fire to the whole of this camp, or rather, had possessed the power. For he did not yet know the toll the storm had taken on his abilities, nor did Jahandar know the full price he'd been forced to pay to wield such awesome ability. He needed the book to restore himself back to his former graces. Needed it to assist Reza with his efforts. Jahandar paced from one end of his tiny tent to the other, his mind a constant flicker of thoughts, the thoughts piling one on top of another, turning tinder to flame. There were only three people in the camp who knew of the book. One of them had prepared his tea last night, the tea that had likely brought about this unusually restful slumber. Another had been asking about the book for the past 3 days, had asked to see the book and learn of its contents, the book that had, until then, been of little import to anyone save Jahandar. Jahandar stopped pacing. Had he been deceived by his own flesh and blood? Had his own children fleeced him? And then taken from him his one true chance to be a man of power and influence? A man worthy of consideration. Jahandar's hands clenched tightly into fists. He reached for his cloak, the rage building, passing into his arms and chest, swirling through his mind in a storm of hot fury. The last of these individuals would help Jahandar get the book back. For this man had just as much to lose by its disappearance, just as much to gain by its use. Jahandar may not be sure of much anymore, but of that he was certain, just as he knew he would do anything to get the book back, even beg, barter, or steal, even murder. Sherzad knew she should leave Tariq's tent. She'd been inside almost all afternoon. Though her shoulder was still sore and her body still weak from the past night's ordeal, it was time to return to her own tent, to proceed as though all were well. For if she spent another night in Tariq's tent, someone was bound to take notice. And such a thing would not bode well for either of them in the long run, despite their feigned relationship. She rose to her feet and winced at the sudden flare of pain that shot down one side of her body. Her mouth and throat were parched, With a frown, Sherazade reached for the tumbler of tonic by her bedside and nearly toppled over in the process. Cursing under her breath, she righted herself before taking a long swallow of the bitter liquid. If she never again drank anything steeped in barley or willow bark, it would be too soon. I cannot remain so weak, especially since I will need to journey to Ray shortly. Fighting to stand straight, she squared her chemise and wrapped her shamina to conceal the thick wrappings banded about her shoulder. For a moment, she thought to wait until Irsa returned to help. Her sister had, strangely, disappeared after bringing the tonic to her bedside over an hour ago, and Sherazade had no intention of continuing to lounge about in idle solitude.
"Sherazade Jaune."
She almost dropped the tumbler. Trying to maintain her composure, Sherazade tugged the shamina even tighter about her.
"Uncle Reza."
She set down the tumbler, balling her hands into fists to conceal their sudden quaking.
"I didn't mean to startle you."
He smiled with undisguised warmth, his brown eyes almost liquid in the afternoon sun shining from beneath the tent flap.
"I wasn't startled," Sherazade swallowed. "Are you looking for Tariq?"
"No." Reza eyed the rumpled bed pallet. "I was looking for you. May I speak with you for a moment?" "Actually, I was on my way back to my tent to meet Irsa. Is it a matter of import?"
"Somewhat."
He stepped to one side. "I can walk with you, if you don't mind. My tent is on the way." Though she felt discomfited by his persistence, Sherazade could think of no reason to demur.
"Of course."
Reza held open the tent flap for her. A guard stood outside, only to trail behind them at a distance. Sherazade tried to mask her unease at both the guard's nearness and the lasting pain from her ordeal. How odd that Uncle Reza needs a guard with him at all times, especially in his own camp, as though he cannot trust those around him.
"What can I help you with?"
she began, striving to sound light-hearted, striving to tamp down how unnerved she felt, for it was clear Reza bin Latif had known she was not in her own tent last night.
"Does he know anything more?"
Her heart hammered in her chest. Reza smiled patiently.
"I've noticed you're spending more time with Tariq."
"Yes."
"Is everything going well?"
"Yes." She glanced at him sidelong, unsure what he meant.
"Then you are no longer ill?"
Again Sherazade swallowed.
"No." "I've been worried about you of late. Word has reached me that you've been unusually tired during the day."
He trailed off, watching her all too circumspectly. Sherazade grinned, then bit her lip, affecting a sheepish expression.
"I think the past few months have simply taken a toll on me, Uncle Reza. It's been a bit of an adjustment here, but I'm much better now."
A single brow rose.
"Truly?
Your coloring leaves a great deal to be desired. Have you spoken with Aisha about your health?" She waved a dismissive hand.
"I don't wish to trouble Aisha with such things. In any case, Irsa has already made me a tonic that has helped a great deal."
"Irsa?" He paused in consideration.
"So Irsa knows how to brew tonics, then?"
"Somewhat. I suppose you should try one first and then decide." Sherazade widened her smile.
"I see."
He stopped near his tent, his expression still dubious. Reza then reached for her arm, his touch light, but nevertheless not to be ignored.
"Sherazade, I do so wish to trust you, but I noticed something rather troubling, and I can no longer remain silent on the matter."
Sherazade pulled back.
"I'm sorry?"
Her heart began to trip about in her chest.
"I saw the bloodied linen beside the bed pallet, Sherazade Jaune."
He placed a gentle palm on her forearm, as though he meant to comfort her.
"You are clearly injured. I'd like to send for Aisha to take a look at it."
Reza turned to direct the guard behind them with a motion of his free hand.
Uncle Reza, truly I'm not. She tried to pull away again, panic seizing her.
I insist. He smiled, his grip tightening on her arm. If it were anyone else, Sherzad would have felt beyond threatened. But this was her best friend's father, a man Sherzad had known for much of her life, a man she had long considered a second father of sorts.
I could not, in good conscience, let you leave without first knowing whether or not you are well, Reza continued. Please allow Aisha to care for your injury. If you don't mind, I shall wait with you inside until she arrives.
Uncle Reza, Sherzad John, his expression softened. I've neglected you for far too long, and I was unjust when you first arrived. Though it was from a place of pain, there is still no excuse. Please allow me to make amends. Your condition is truly causing me a great deal of concern, and I cannot continue to go about ignoring it. Allow me this small indulgence, please. He motioned with a nod of his head for her to proceed into his tent. Reluctantly, Sherzad made her way inside, for she could not see how best to extricate herself without drawing even further attention. The tent was dark, dark enough that it took her eyes a moment to adjust to the layers of shadow. Then, from the edges of her vision, Sherzad caught sight of a hulking figure looming by the entrance. It was the sentry she'd first met the day after she'd arrived at the Bedouin camp. The one with the Fidai brand seared into his forearm. The one who dealt her a rather rash judgment, only to be meted out, one in kind. He came for her in a blur of gray, streaking through the dark. Sherzad spun back toward the entrance, a scream barreling from her lips. She looked to Reza bin Latif for help, to Shiva's father, to the second father she'd so long trusted. He watched idly, a calm lethality about his gaze. As the Fidai assassin grabbed her by the throat, as a nauseating sweetness clouded her senses, and everything went black.
The greatest of all living powers. Omar al-Sadiq was afraid. It had been many years since he truly felt fear. He was far too old for fear. Far too at ease with life. Far too set in his ways. But he could not find the Khalifa of Khorasan. He'd searched for her all afternoon. And Irsa al-Khayzuran was nowhere to be found either. Omar had known something was afoot last night, when his most trusted sentry had come to him and reported that Sherzad had not returned to her tent. Nor had that same sentry seen the Khalifa anywhere thereabouts this morning, which was indeed cause for alarm. Before, when Sherzad had disappeared each night, she'd always returned to her tent by dawn. And now Omar was certain his worst fears had come to pass. In truth, he'd known it was only a matter of time, which left Omar with a decision to make. It was obvious Reza bin Latif had lied to him about his intentions, as Omar had suspected Reza might do, but it broke his heart to know the truth with such unequivocal certainty, for Reza had become a friend. He'd been a good man once, a man who had loved his wife and daughter and lived a life of simple desires. But suffering had changed all that, for it was easy to be good and kind in times of plenty. The trying times were the moments that defined a man. And love? Love was something that did much to change a person. It brought joy as it brought suffering, and in turn brought about those moments that defined one's character. Love gave life to the lifeless. It was the greatest of all living powers. But as with all things, love had a dark side to it. The darkness had overtaken Reza bin Latif, as Omar had seen it would. Omar had seen its shadow descend upon his friend.
just as Omar had known his own tribe would fall into the clash of two kingdoms, would be caught between the warring nations of Khorasan and Parthia, one a sovereign land of plenty, besieged by recent misfortune, the other its lesser in all ways, save for ambition. The lands of the Badawi lay along the border between Khorasan and Parthia, and Omar had known it would be impossible for him to remain apart from any conflict that occurred between the two, however much he may have wished it could be so. His people were too close, his land too valuable. But Omar had not known how best to proceed. He had not known who would be his true enemy and whom he could fashion into a friend. And Omar was not the type to choose sides without learning all he could first, without seeing both faces of the coin. He had hoped Tariq, the young nobleman from Khorasan who possessed such a pure heart, would help to guide him. The white falcon from Khorasan, who would guide his kingdom from the darkness back into the light. But now Omar was not so sure, for he'd not yet had the chance to speak freely on these matters with Tariq, and the boy's heart had not seemed to be in the recent raids made on neighboring strongholds. Omar was not certain Tariq had chosen right in following his uncle. Not certain Tariq knew how best to choose between right and wrong, for Tariq had seen only one face of the coin. It was time for Omar to share with Tariq all he knew, all he had learned from all his quiet observance, all he had long suspected. It was time for Tariq to make a choice as well, for Tariq's uncle had already made his, a path into darkness. And now the Khalifa of Khorasan and her young sister were missing. Omar need only hazard one guess as to where they'd been taken, which meant the two kingdoms were likely on the brink of war, which meant the Al-Sadiq tribe would ride again. But with whom? With a mysterious boy king who had murdered all his brides without seeming cause? Or with a power-hungry tyrant who had paid mercenaries to bide their time amongst Omar's people? The same power-hungry tyrant Omar suspected had allied himself with Reza bin Latif long ago. For Omar had seen the trunks of gold being spirited away under cover of night. He had seen the brigands with their scarab brands. It was why he had asked Reza bin Latif's forces to relocate to the outskirts of his camp nearly a fortnight ago. But which of these two kings was the true villain of this story? For a story was only as good as its villain. Indeed, it was time for Omar to make a decision, to pry back the worn wool from the desert's eyes. For the desert did indeed have eyes. Eyes Omar had put in place many moons ago. Omar had always known how to watch and listen. This desert was his desert, a desert his people had ruled for six generations. It was time for Omar to see if Tariq was made of more than muscle and metal, to see if Tariq could handle the truth. Once Omar had confessed it to him, he would hear what the boy had to say, and his decision would be made. Whether it would make the boy his enemy or his ally remained to be seen. But Omar's people came first. Despite how much he'd come to care for the boy, despite how much Omar longed to see the boy achieve all he'd set out to achieve, how much he longed to see Tariq's love story win out. Omar had said it to Aisha many times before. Though she'd harumphed at him quite severely whenever she heard it, he knew it never ceased to make her smile. "Give me a meaningful love or a beautiful death." Alas, Omar was a greedy man. He'd always hoped to have both. Life and death in the pages of a book. Khalid rode through the desert until the sun dipped low on the horizon. It would take him two more days of hard riding to reach Ray. By that time, his uncle would undoubtedly be at his wit's end. it would not matter that Khalid was the caliph and therefore entitled to his own freedom. In matters such as this, General Aref al-Khoury only saw an angry boy alone in the shadows, the same boy he had quietly cared for these many years. Khalid could only hope the Sharban believed him occupied by one of his many excursions into the city, or that Jalal had been willing to conceal Khalid's absence for a short while. But Khalid doubted his cousin would be willing to do such a thing, for their exchanges over the past few weeks had been stilted at best, downright hostile at worst. As it was, Khalid did not know how he would ever explain this particular disappearance to his cousin, and Khalid had been unable to find a trace of Despina or the Rajput anywhere. He continued riding at a brisk pace through the umber sands until only a hint of the sun's warmth lingered across the sky. Then he dismounted from the borrowed steed and removed the pack of provisions from the saddle. With only a moment to catch his breath, Khalid pulled free the book from its place in the worn leather folds of the pack. The book was still wrapped in a length of coarse brown linen. Tucking it beneath his arm, Khalid strode away from the horse, his hand shifting toward the dagger at his hip. He did not know what to expect. Though the strange sorceress in the eastern mountains had warned that the book would scream, would fight back, Khalid still did not know what it might bring about. Nor did he trust her, not in the slightest. Which was why he'd waited to do anything with the book until he was far away from anyone or anything. No one else would die for this curse, not if he could help it. Khalid removed the jeweled dagger from his sash. Then he placed the book on a rise of sand before him. Once he'd unwrapped it, he studied it for a spell. It was strangely unremarkable, ugly even, bound in tattered, water-stained leather, degraded at the edges, rusted at the bindings, sealed in its center by a tarnished lock Khalid felt certain even the most unskilled thief could open with a hairpin. Strange that something so commonplace could signify so much, could do so much incalculable damage to so many lives, to entire cities, to so many families. Just a book, merely scratchings on a page. Khalid smiled a bitter smile. The power behind words lies with the person. It had always been one of his mother's favorite teachings, one of the more notable bits of wisdom Musa Zaragoza had ever imparted upon them both. He narrowed his gaze on the worn volume below. The words in this particular book would never give power to anyone again. And, if the sorceress had not lied to them that evening in the mountain fortress, her words would spare Khalid from a life rooted in the past, from a life spent atoning for his sins. Khalid removed the black key from around his neck and unlocked the book. The pages sprang open. An eerie white light emanated from within. Sickly, the slashing text was indecipherable to him. When Khalid reached out to touch the pages, a sudden flare of heat shot toward him, burning the tips of his fingers. He swore. With the burn came another flash of light, violent and vivid and bright, wickedly so. No more. Khalid unsheathed the dagger. The book pulsed in response, rippled with a vital sort of menace. He drew the blade across his palm, dripped his blood onto the metal. It began to glow a fiery red. Then he let his blood trickle onto the pages of the book. The book began to scream, a high-pitched, keening wail. For a moment, its pages seemed to scorch. The smell took on a presence, heavy and thick in the air. The drops of crimson blackened as they struck the book's surface. Pale gray swirls rose above them, curling in sinister suggestion. The wind bowed around Khalid, covering him in an eddy of dust and smoke. With the blooming gusts, The symbols the sorceress had worked into the blade began to shimmer as if in response to a threat. Khalid lifted the dagger high, but the smoke stayed his hand. It gathered a life force of its own and wrapped itself around his wrists in an icy vise. What Khalid felt in that moment was like nothing he'd ever experienced in his life. It was not a vision, nor was it a memory. It was not a dream, nor was it a nightmare. It was simply a feeling, a naked, exposed sort of feeling, the kind that ebbed from his center, drawing itself to the surface for all the world to see, the kind he'd spent so much of his life trying to deny, for fear it would make him appear weak, would make those around him see past his skin into his very soul. It was every moment he'd ever felt alone, every moment he'd ever felt powerless, every moment he'd ever wanted to disappear. Every ugly thought and every empty feeling coursing through him, as though the book had reached within him and grasped every doubt, every insecurity, and brought it to the surface. Brought it there to tell Khalid he was not worthy of anything. Not worthy to be a king, not worthy of his uncle's faith, not worthy of Jalal's loyalty, not worthy of Vikram's friendship, not worthy of Shahrzad's love. After all, what had he done to deserve any of it? He was the unwanted second son of an unwanted second wife. Everything to one person, then nothing to no one. Nothing. He'd been nothing but an angry boy in the shadows for so long. A boy who'd envied his brother from the shadows. A boy who'd watched his mother die from the shadows. A boy who'd thrived in the shadows. Now he had to live in the light, to live, fiercely, to fight for every breath. Khalid grasped the dagger with both hands, but the smoke fought back. The jade talisman coiled about his neck. The screams rang louder around him. The sand swirled in a raging vortex, pressing in, tighter and tighter, trying to swallow him, trying to make him disappear. All he'd wanted for so long was to disappear, to take all the ugliness with him, all the vicious memories of his mother's blood spilling across blue-veined agate and silken cords at sunrise, and vanish without a trace. No! He squeezed the dagger tighter. No! Every letter Khalid had ever written, he'd written for a purpose. Every apology he'd ever made, he'd made for a reason. Every journey he'd taken into Ray, he'd taken with hope, because he wanted to be better. Here was his chance to be better, finally, a chance to live, to love, in the light. Blood dripping from his hands, Khalid slammed the dagger into the book. As the book let out a final gut-wrenching scream, the sand closed in around him, pressed in on him, biting into his skin. Khalid couldn't breathe, couldn't see. The wind and the sand strove to choke him, to steal away his last bit of purpose, to fight for the book's last bit of strength. His chest heaving, Khalid tore a scrap of coarse brown linen for tinder, then struck the flint to catch a flame. The wind snuffed out the tinder in the same instant. It took 5 tries to light, 5 tries to fight against the billowing silt, 5 tries to cup the fire close and let the pages catch flame. The book burned blue and fell for hours, until the sand finally swirled back to the ground, until Khalid finally fell with it, exhausted. He stared up at the sky, his body broken, every wound across his skin ached. The scars reopened in the struggle. Khalid's blood seeped into the sand. His eyelids began to droop. He was losing consciousness, losing blood. He would die here in the desert. But it did not matter. If he took the curse with him, if he kept his people safe. If he kept Shahrzad safe, nothing else mattered. A strangely peaceful breeze ruffled his hair. It brought a sense of calm Khalid had only experienced around Shahrzad. That small measure of peace he always fought to keep. Like water cupped in his hand, If Sherzad was safe, he could be at peace. His eyes drifted closed. Then Khalid slept, with the jade talisman in pieces beside him. The Sandstone Palace. When Sherzad woke, it was to the sound of birds and the feel of silk. Even the faintly scented breeze around her conveyed nothing but light and beauty. Yet beneath it she felt nothing but the sense of being controlled, the sense of being imprisoned. She was in a bower. True, she was still dressed in the same rumpled camise and dirty sirwal trousers she last remembered wearing, but the chamber she'd slept in rivaled the finest rooms of the palace in Rey. Indeed, it could be argued that it might even surpass them. The open screens to her right were far more ornate in their carvings, perhaps even a tad garish. The richly stained wood was inlaid with ivory, flecked by dark green jasper. Beyond the screens, Sherzad could see a series of trellises shading a marbled balcony. Branches of flowering trees hung over the terrace, threading through the white latticework like drapery, their bright pink blossoms heavy on their boughs. The walls of her chamber were sandstone. Where she could see the walls, that is. Thick tapestries clung to every exposed surface. In the corner was a table fashioned from many bits of colorful tile. It was as though a crazed artisan had taken a hammer to a rainbow, destroying something beautiful in an effort to create something decidedly less so. The pillows tossed about were bold and fringed with tiny mirrors embroidered by threads of gold and silver. On the gaudy table was a basket of flatbread and a copper tumbler, along with a platter of fresh herbs, rounds of goat cheese, small cucumbers, and an assortment of sweet chutney. When Sherzad examined the tray of food more closely, she noticed her host had not provided her with a knife, nor was there a utensil or sharp object of any kind in sight. Her suspicions as to her whereabouts mounting, Sherzad rose from the mass of silken cushions and took a turn about the room. She could not see past the intricate screens at the edge of her balcony. Indeed, she could see very little outside this prison of sandstone and ivory. When she attempted to turn both handles of the double doors, which were presumably the chamber's entrance, they were firmly sealed from without, just as Sherzad had expected. Her shoulder still ached, but at least it no longer debilitated her. At least it would not inhibit her from fleeing were the opportunity to present itself. "It's clear I've been asleep for quite some time." Sherzad's thoughts turned more grim. "How long has Shiva's father been planning to take me from the Bedouin camp against my will?" For it was now obvious Reza bin Latif had been in league with the Fidai assassins for quite some time, had likely been one to send the mercenaries to Rey those many weeks ago in an attempt to either kill Khalid or kidnap Sherzad with a mind to use her as leverage. And now Sherzad had successfully been taken unawares, to a place she was certain would bring about a predictable turn of events. Especially since Sherzad had a sinking feeling she knew where she had been taken. Trying to tamp down her fears, Sherzad made her way to the tray of food on the garishly colorful table in the corner. She dripped some of the water from the tumbler onto the silver edge of the tray, waiting to see if it would darken the tray's surface. When it did not change color, Sherzad trickled some of the liquid onto her skin, to see if it would do her any harm. Then she took a tentative sip. Her throat was terribly parched. She did not yet trust the food, but she knew she must at least wet her tongue if she meant to survive for any stretch of time. When Sherzad heard the sound of grating metal beyond the double doors, she knocked aside the herbs and smashed the platter against the edge of the mosaic table. Then she grabbed one of the larger shards of porcelain and wrapped a linen napkin around one end to fashion a rudimentary weapon. At the very least, she would not face down her enemy without a fight. One of the double doors swung open. Sherazade concealed her weapon to one side of her sun-worn trousers, only to watch her father breeze across the threshold. Well-dressed and wearing a smile through the wisps of his neatly trimmed beard. Baba? When Jahandar saw Sherazade, armed and crouched in an almost feral position upon the marble floor, he lifted his scarred hands in a placating gesture. Sherazade Jahn, you mustn't be afraid. He moved to her with a swift-footedness Sherazade had not seen from him in quite some time. Baba? She blinked, beyond confused to see him in such a poised and polished state. Where are we? Dearest, please put down the weapon. There is no cause to be afraid. He smiled again, even brighter. The guards outside told me you'd tried the door not long ago, so I came straight away. Where are we? Sherazade demanded again. I know you must be afraid, but he does not wish you any harm. No one does. Indeed, you will be safer here than you were in the encampment, and much better cared for, as befitting your status. His shoulders rolled back at the last, filled with a peculiar sort of pride, a pride that did not fit her situation at all. Baba! She admonished, her frustration clear, for he had yet to answer the question she'd now twice posed. His smile faltered, but only slightly. Reza thought it best you be brought to Amarda. As she'd suspected. Nevertheless, Sherazade's heart lurched. For a moment, she could scarcely breathe. You brought me to Salim Ali el-Sharif? Of course! Jahandar did not even flinch at her dangerous tone. He is your husband's uncle, is he not? He spoke simply, though his expression indicated much more knowledge. How could you do this to me? She whispered. At her quiet accusation, her father's watery eyes wavered, then stiffened at the edges. In that instant, Sherazade realized he would not be moved by her pleas. Not this time. He pulled straight. Perhaps it is I who should be asking you this question, daughter. Immediately, Sherazade recoiled from both his charge and the cold light that had entered his eyes. Eyes that had always been a warm mirror to her own. What have you done with my book? Her father asked in a mincing tone. I don't know what you're talking about. She lifted her chin, trying to conceal her apprehension. Sherazade, I've already spoken to Irsa. I know it was she who drugged me. Sherazade remained stone-faced, though her heart missed a beat at the mention of her sister. She refused to say anything further on the matter, but you know as well as I that Irsa is incapable of uttering a falsehood, and her attempts to avoid disclosing the truth belied her actions. His face screwed tight in frustration. Therefore, I must insist that you... Though it took effort, her father managed to temper his reaction. I am not angry, dearest. I know someone must have coerced you. Perhaps the caliph or someone with the desire to undermine... No, no one coerced me to do anything, because nothing has been done. Again, a flash of cold light filled her father's gaze. Do not lie to me, daughter. Sherazade steeled herself even further. Where is Irsa, Baba? No response, save for a soft inhalation of breath, the barest of hesitations. Baba? He opened his mouth to answer, then paused a telling beat, a beat that made Sherazade's throat swell tight with trepidation. Her father offered a kind grin. You are still weak from the journey and your injuries. Allow the Sultan's servants to tend to you, after which you should join us for dinner. The Sultan's daughter has been quite worried about you.
I promise all will be discussed tonight.
Sherzad reached for him, unable to conceal her fear any longer.
Baba, please don't!
I have allowed you a great deal of freedom, daughter. Perhaps I have allowed you too much.
Her father's tone was firm. He stood quite tall, taller than Sherzad ever remembered him standing. Indeed, she had not seen him act with such vim since before her mother had died.
You have defied me long enough, Sherzad. I will not allow you to lie to me about this. You are toying with something far too dangerous and far too important.
Rest for now, and we will discuss the matter later.
Jahandar turned away.
Please just tell me if Irsa is...
Rest, and we will discuss the matter tonight, when you are ready to tell me the truth.
With that, Jahandar al-Khaizuran strode from the chamber in a whirl of fine silk.
Sherzad sank back beside the shards of broken porcelain, still clutching her makeshift weapon. The panic she'd been fighting since she'd first caught sight of her father. No, since the first inkling of where she was had begun to take root, washed over her with a dire sort of urgency. The war she'd meant to end had now slipped beyond her control, far beyond the boundaries of her worst fears come to pass. For as soon as word reached Rey that Sherzad was being held prisoner in Amarda, was now a guest of the uncle who most assuredly planned to use her as a pawn, Khalid would march on the city with a host at his back. Of that, Sherzad was certain. And, though the truth of it would undoubtedly cost Sherzad her father's trust and more, she was also certain of another thing. Khalid had already destroyed the book, which left them nothing with which to bargain. Nothing to use as leverage. Except her. But Sherzad was not a fool. She would not quail before the Sultan of Parthia. Would not beg for even one word of kindness from her enemy. Nor would she wait to be saved, like a child wailing in the wings. She would do what needed to be done. She would find Irsa. And uncover a way out of this cursed city. Or die trying. Her worry about Irsa made Sherzad comply. Even though she did not think her father would permit her sister to be harmed, Sherzad no longer knew what thoughts swirled behind his power-hungry eyes. So she said nothing when the servants entered the room to help her bathe and dress. Strangely, the entire affair seemed eerily reminiscent of the day Sherzad had first arrived at the palace in Rey, when the two servant girls had readied Sherzad for marriage to a monster. When they'd scrubbed sandalwood paste on her arms and dusted her skin with flakes of gold before placing a heavy mantle upon her shoulders. This time, Sherzad's garments were nearly as elaborate as they'd been that fateful afternoon. Vermilion, a rich red that reminded her of a setting summer sun, or fresh blood trickling from an open wound. The sirwal trousers were cut from the finest silk, embroidered in gilt thread. The fitted top was low across her chest, much lower than Sherzad was accustomed to wearing. The mantle was fashioned from a thin gold fabric, not from the more typical damask. This fabric instead resembled gossamer. In the light, it hinted at everything beneath. Sherzad felt exposed, vulnerable, which she knew was not by happenstance. The servants wove her black hair into a thick braid and wound strings of seed pearls around the shining plate. The bangles on Sherzad's left arm and the hoops in her ears were of hammered bullion with matching seed pearls and tiny diamonds embedded throughout. As her father had assured, Sherzad had been well tended, dressed to fit her station, but she did not feel like a queen. For a prisoner can never be a khalifa. But a khalifa is only a prisoner if she chooses to be. At these thoughts, Sherzad threw back her shoulders and curled her toes within her pointed slippers. Her head high, she followed the servants into the corridor where a contingent of armed guards stood at the ready, waiting to lead her toward the next destination. Again, Shahrzad was struck by the overblown opulence of the sandstone structure around her. True, the palace at Rey had been marbled and polished past explanation, but there had always been a coldness to it, a kind of stark unwillingness to embrace all that it was. And now that Shahrzad saw all a palace could be, she was oddly glad Khalid had not appointed every corner with a gilt statue or every stretch of the eaves with a glittering tapestry. Indeed, it seemed every alcove in Amarda had been adorned in gold leaf or silver foil, every cusp framed with carvings and embedded with jewels beyond reason or taste, and the sight of it all made Shahrzad rather uncomfortable. The only place where the palace at Rey outdid the sandstone edifice of Amarda was in its calligraphy, for Rey did boast an inordinate amount of elegant artistry, of swooping flourishes and graceful swirls made in service to the written word. And Shahrzad knew it was because Khalid had a penchant for poetry. While it was obvious Salim Ali al-Sharif had a preference for opulence, give me poetry any day. Despite everything, Shahrzad almost smiled to herself at the thought. The guards led Shahrzad down several more lavish hallways toward a set of beautifully carved doors as wide and as tall as any Shahrzad had ever seen. Of course, just as she'd come to expect in less than a day, the doors were coated in a layer of liquid gold, with handles of solid sapphire the size of her fist. Two guards pushed them open, and she followed the crush of soldiers down a series of polished sandstone steps into a cavernous room of pale pink granite, veined with deep threads of burgundy. A single long table stretched through its center, lit by lengthy tapers perfumed in rosewater and myrrh. The tablecloth looked to be spun from the finest spider silk, gleaming lustrous in the warm light cast from the taper's glow. Because the room could undoubtedly use more gold. As far as the eye could see, Shahrzad took in an altogether unnecessary display of opulence. Even the scent of the tapers cloyed at the back of her throat, for it was overwrought, overdone, overmuch. Shahrzad was the first to arrive. Again, she was certain this was no accident. A guard directed her to a richly appointed cushion of darkest blue near the center. While none of the soldiers were outright rude to her, she did notice a certain sort of amusement ripple through the throng when the one nearest to Shahrzad, a young man with a scar slanted across his nose, leered down at her chest as she bent to take a seat. Shahrzad gazed up at him, fire in her eyes. "Is there a reason you're staring at me in such a manner?" she said, her snappish voice bounding through the cavernous hall. "Have you a death wish, or are you merely as senseless as you look?" He dipped his head in a terse bow, his jaw taut. "That is not an answer, you insolent fool, and it barely constitutes a bow," she continued, determined to make a point of this interaction. Shahrzad could not let any man in this cursed city treat her poorly, even for a moment. For if they saw even a trace of weakness in her, it would be her undoing. A wave of laughter filled the air at her back. Shahrzad's body froze at the sound of it. "Salim." "Just as silver-tongued as ever, my lady." He clapped his hands as though he meant to applaud her. The sound rang in her ears, sharp and crackling. Shahrzad did not turn around, would not dare give him the satisfaction. Instead, she faced forward and put on a show of affecting a light-hearted expression. "Your soldiers could stand to learn a lesson in respect, my lord." Shahrzad grinned as the Sultan of Parthia came into view. Salim returned her strident greeting by bowing with a flourish. "And I suppose you intend to give it to them?" He braced a hand on the gleaming hilt of his scimitar, a hand meant to remind Sherzad of her position.
Well, someone should.
She grazed her fingertips across her forehead as she emulated his mocking obeisance. Jahandar al-Khaizuran followed the sultan, dressed in his silken finery, palms folded before him, his expression warring between pensive and perturbed. Either her father did not know she and Salim had already established a troubling rapport, or he was laboring to conceal the knowledge. Sherzad refrained from meeting her father's gaze. The betrayal was still too fresh, and she did not want Salim to know how at odds they were, how hurt she was by her father's treachery. Salim moved to sit across from Sherzad, a tranquil elegance to each of his movements. His heavily embroidered mantle and his beautifully tailored garments were just as overwrought as his palace. Like a simpering cat recently fed on the richest cream, Salim smiled at Sherzad, his perfect mustache sloping above his wolfish teeth.
"I'm so glad you've come to visit us in Amarda."
"Sherzad Jan, it's been long overdue."
"Visit?"
Sherzad peaked a brow. "That's a rather interesting choice of words." Salim lounged, his elbow against the sapphire cushion to his left.
"Surely you prefer it here to that tribal outpost you've been forced to bide your time in for the past few weeks."
"I couldn't say. My doors were never locked in that tribal outpost."
"Indeed." He aimed another spurious grin her way. "Do tents have doors?"
"Indeed they do not, but at least I had the pleasure of my sister's company there. I don't suppose you'd care to..."
"Of course. How inconsiderate of me. You must be quite hungry."
Salim laughed, motioning toward the double doors behind her. Her father did not even bother turning as he fidgeted with the scalloped spoon beside his plate. Sherzad heard them swing open, and the scent of butter and spices wafted her way. Despite her resolve not to eat a morsel until she'd learned of Irsa's whereabouts, the intoxicating aroma made it rather difficult for her to stand firm in this conviction. When the servants placed a silver platter of spiced potatoes before her, along with a perfect mound of pistachio and pomegranate rice surrounded by skewers of saffron chicken, still flaming lamb kebabs, and steaming tomatoes all heaped upon ornate serving trays, Sherzad's stomach rumbled with hunger. She could not remember the last time she had eaten so well. Her mouth salivated at the smell of the simmering stew set before her, one of aromatic lentils and caramelized onions. The sweet scent of cinnamon and cloves called to her, the dates and the aubergines taunting her even further. The last straw was the sight of the quince chutney. Sherzad sat on her hands.
"Are you not hungry?" Salim asked, a wicked gleam in his eye.
"I've selected dishes I'm told are your favorites." Her father frowned at her.
"Sherzad Jan, the sultan's daughter told the cook to prepare a special meal in your honor."
"I'm sure she did," Sherzad muttered, gnawing the inside of her cheek.
"Perhaps my daughter can persuade you to eat."
The light in Salim's eyes burned bright as he glanced over her shoulder. Sherzad did not look behind her, for the last thing she wanted to see at the moment was the perfect smile of Yasmin el-Sharif.
"If she attempts to bait me tonight, it will not be soot I smear on her teeth."
"No.
It will be my fist."
"Come, daughter," Salim called out. "Our guest is quite excited to see you."
"Indeed, positively thrilled."
Sherzad pursed her lips and wrapped her fingers around the silken cushion at her sides as though it would imbue her with the strength to remain calm. The soft shuffle of slippered footsteps on polished granite emanated nearby. With obvious reluctance, Sherzad lifted her gaze. Eyes the color of a cerulean sky sparkled down at her.
Sherzad's chin struck her collarbone in horror.
Hello, brat, Khalifa.
Despina.
Many things happened all at once. First, Sherzad bolted to her feet, intent on attacking her former handmaiden. A flurry of motion converged upon them. Before the guards could reach her, Sherzad stopped short. Her reaction was not a result of the soldier's unspoken threat. Nor was it a result of some misplaced sense of propriety. Alas, with Sherzad, it was never that. It was something else entirely. It was worry. Worry for a former friend. Worry for a child not yet born. Just as soon as the worry coursed through Sherzad, it was eclipsed by another tide of emotion. Bitterness. Black and choking bitterness. Her gaze flicked over the sweeping curves of the girl before her, always lovely, and now even more resplendent, in a dress of amethyst silk, gathered at both shoulders by copper cuffs, forming shimmering folds. These silken folds fell to Despina's feet in streams of lilac and mauve. The deep cut of the garment only accentuated her beautiful shape, as did the high waist and the copper sash, embellished with brilliant gemstones of vivid purple and blush pink, encircled in rose gold. Her honey walnut hair was piled atop her head in an ornate arrangement adorned with a band of glittering jewels. A crown. The bitterness swelled within Sherzad. Despina had been many things to Sherzad once. She'd been a friend when Sherzad had most needed it, a confidant where Sherzad had had none. But it was clear everything Sherzad had known about Despina had been cloaked in lies. For it was beyond evident she was even more things now. The secret daughter of Salim Ali al-Sharif, a princess of Parthia, a spy and a deceiver. Above all things, it was clear Despina had never been Sherzad's friend.
Was there ever a moment in which you told me the truth?
Sherzad demanded in a raw whisper. Despina's lips gathered into a perfect moo, an all too familiar one.
Aren't you going to congratulate me? I'm married now, or haven't you heard?
Her moo slid into a grin. Over Despina's shoulder, Yasmin walked closer, with an uneasy laugh and a reticent gait. Amidst all the recent confusion, Sherzad had not even seen the daughter she'd known about. The daughter she'd been expecting. At least Yasmin has the grace to feel embarrassed. For Yasmin al-Sharif did seem oddly out of place. Though she looked every bit as stunning as Sherzad remembered, her mahogany hair a profusion of waves down her back, and her emerald skirt's gentle sway hinting at the sort of grace no amount of practice could ever perfect. The princess also did not seem to want to take part in this terrible unveiling. She continued glancing over her shoulder as though she meant to flee. The girl seemed as though she wanted to be anywhere but here. Sherzad's eyes returned to Despina.
Married? What poor fool have you duped into marriage?
Despina winked.
Wouldn't you like to know?
She floated into the seat beside her father. But congratulations are due nonetheless, for it just so happens my husband is a good friend of yours. Still inexplicably taciturn, Yasmin took the place next to Despina, while Jahandar sat beside Sherzad. He shot her a nervous glance full of warning, which Sherzad promptly ignored. The feast before her forgotten in a sea of rage, Sherzad glowered at her devious former handmaiden as moments from their shared past drifted hot and fast into her present.
A good spy would hide her identity. The best spies don't have to.
So many conversations shared over so many cups of tea, so many supposed confidences. Despina's mother had been one of the most famous beauties in all of Cadmia. Her father had been a rich man who'd left them both behind for a brighter future. Or had he? What could Sherzad believe of the tales she'd been told?
Of course Despina would not want to marry Jalal. Of course she would not want to marry into the family she'd been spying on for so many years. Of course she would flee, only to return to her father's waiting arms.